Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian. Thanks to everyone for downloading and listening. November 7th. Gosh, we are cruising along here on the college football season. Alabama still undefeated. Big win and cover against LSU last weekend in Death Valley. And Bama, yes, again, covers the first half. A perfect 9-0 this year. We'll get into all that with Phil Steele coming up and also John Murray of the Superbook at the Westgate in Las Vegas. We're going to talk about Phil's plays for this coming weekend. Murray, 4-1 behind the counter with his sharp plays that he shared, and he has a bunch this week, 7, I believe. And we're going to discuss that and some other macro topics for sports betting and college football, and even a little Duke hoops after last night's thrashing of Kentucky. Am I overreacting too much to Duke? Well, the Westgate's already adjusting their odds. The Superbook did, so we'll see if I'm overreacting or really everyone is in the betting public. And we'll get into all that straight ahead here on the Behind the Bets podcast.
Stop. Hammer time.
And it was definitely hammer time for Bama last weekend. You know, got a lot of people wondering whether LSU and the points at home at night was the play, but certainly not from the start.
Yeah, that is for sure. And I agree with you, Doug. Last week, I did a whole bunch of radio shows, and almost every host was like, boy, that LSU plus the points sure sounds good. But Bama clearly was the better play. And no doubt, while both teams had good defenses, only one of those two teams had a good offense.
How much are your power ratings adjusted after that game for Bama and even LSU, too?
You know, not much. My power ratings had Alabama winning the game by, I think it was 19. They won by 29, so slight adjustment up for Alabama and a little adjustment down for LSU, but not too much.
What did you make of this line with Clemson and Alabama, 8.5 by the Superbook?
It makes sense. You know, there's a lot of folks in Vegas that like to just bet Bama, and especially after a game like that, they're going to do that. I personally would have set the line more towards 7. I think Clemson is a team that can stand up to Alabama. When you look at Clemson, they've got a balanced offense, NTN in the run game, and then Trevor Lawrence throwing the football, and defensively may have a better defense. I think up front, you look at that front four, you got 4 future NFL guys there on the front four. They're only allowing 90 yards per carry on the ground. They're holding opponents to 154 yards below their season average, which is second best in the country. And they're used to the big games. So this is a Clemson team that I think could stand toe-to-toe with Alabama. I probably would make the line more towards 7.
Interesting. Yeah, no. We're going to talk about it with John Murray of the Superbook coming up later, and just because they've already posted that line, like I mentioned. But it is really interesting given how dominant Bama has looked. But look at Clemson the last few weeks.
They're winning by 51 points per game the last 4 weeks. Just blowing teams out.
Gosh. All right, bud. Well, I made a mistake last week at the end of the podcast. Some of our loyal listeners were kind enough to point that out. You were on Texas A&M, not Auburn, which is interesting because the line went from 4.5 to 3.5. You got the 4 and a hook, lands 4, naturally. And so my apologies to those listening last week's podcast. And to you.
Yeah, and if you watch the game, pretty comfortable with that one. It's 24-14 Texas A&M. There's about 5 minutes, 30 seconds to go in the game, and A&M's got the ball. They throw an interception. Auburn gets, amazingly, 2 touchdowns. A&M actually had a 28-13 first down edge in the game. And even with Auburn's 2 late drives for touchdowns, A&M still outgained by 143 yards. I think A&M's got to be sort of kicking itself after blowing that big lead and pretty much dominating the game.
Yeah, your guy here may have jumped on A&M Pick'em. So, yeah, you may have won with the spread, but not everyone if they got involved in live wagering, because I thought that was a strong play, and then it got going, and I, like I said, your guy here may have gotten involved.
He had to feel pretty good in the middle of the fourth quarter. Unfortunately, they do play a full 60 minutes, and I guess stuff like that happens sometimes.
Yeah, it does. It does happen. All right, so let's get into your plays this week, and let's start with the site of College Game Day, Chestnut Hill, and you like the home team.
Yeah, and you know, after last week, you look at what happened with the top teams, the top six teams in the country. Five of them, of course, were big favorites last week, and those five big favorites pretty much all covered the spread. They went 4-0-1 against the spread. Alabama crushed, Clemson crushed, Georgia crushed. So six of the and Michigan crushed. So I think the big favorites paying an extra price this week. There's going to be a lot of folks lining up the window to bet the big favorites. And here I think you have a Boston College team that's sort of under the radar. They've got an excellent defense, holding their opponents to 47 yards per game below their average. You look at them defensively, personnel-wise, they could be even better than that. And Clemson's main strength on defense is that defensive line. But Boston College is one of the nation's best offensive lines. They only allowed 13 sacks all year. They're averaging 4.6 yards per carry, despite the fact A.J. Dillon's been banged up, missed two full games, parts of others. Dillon should be able to play here. I like the way Anthony Brown's throwing the football. It's at night. It's going to be chilly, which I think is an advantage for Boston College. And so you've got a BC team that's pretty good. And the last time Clemson traveled on the road at night, it's been a while, Texas A&M, week two, they only won that game by 2 points. In fact, A&M had an 88-yard edge in that game. So as much as I like Clemson, love the fact that they're balanced, I just think you're paying too much of a price here at the 20 full points going to a very good Boston College team at home. And BC in their last home game at night beat Miami of Florida 27-14 and pretty much controlled that one.
So this line opens 17 up to 20. I think it's going to go a little higher, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, it's like I said, all the big favorites won last week. People are going to be lined up at the windows to bet the big favorites this week. So I think the numbers will continue to climb.
I think if it gets to 21, I think that's the strike price if you want to get a little too cute for those listening right now. I don't think over 21. I don't think the smart money will allow that.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll drop. I think it can only go up. So by waiting, you're probably in good shape on that one because people are going to want to bet Alabama. They're going to want to bet Clemson and Michigan and Georgia this week.
Yeah, and it's just given the high profile and platform because of game day and everything like that. That's the reason I think it'll stay that high. There'll be enough interest in that game. All right, next game on the board. You like the Lane Train?
Yeah, you know, a couple weeks back on your podcast, Doug, I picked Western Kentucky. I said it was a circle the wagons game for Western Kentucky at home. They were playing FIU. I thought if they're going to do it, they're going to do it in this game. And guess what? They didn't do it.
Nope.
They got beat 38-17 at home to FIU. Last week they went on the road to Middle and lost by 19. This is a team that is now 1-8. And yeah, I said if they're going to do it, they were going to do it 2 weeks ago. They didn't. I think that they just finish off the season in a poor note. They're a team that defensively is giving up 4.6 yards per carry. Offensively, they're struggling to run the football, just 3.6 yards per carry, and they're not getting great quarterback play either. Meanwhile, Florida Atlantic, if you look at them a little bit closer, FAU's a pretty good team. Their losses to Oklahoma, UCF, which they lost to by 21, but UCF a good team. Middle Tennessee on the road, that's a game Florida Atlantic could easily have won. Middle needed a late score to pull out the one-point win. They did get beat by Marshall by 24. I think that game was closer than the final. And then they lose a close one to Louisiana Tech. So they've had five good opponents beat them. They're not taking on a good opponent here. And as we've seen from Lane Kiffin in the past years, his 2 years here at Florida Atlantic, if he gets a chance late in the game to add to the total, he definitely will. He tacked down a late touchdown against FIU last week to beat them by 32. He was an underdog going in there. He has no problem rolling it up at the end. And I think when you get Devin Singletary matched up against a defense that's given up the amount of yards they are, in fact, they're giving up over 5 yards per carry on the road, FAU's going to be pretty excited. They're coming in. They still have a chance to get into a bowl. They just need to win two of their last three games to get to a bowl. So you've got an excited FAU that likes to roll it up. The spread's only 20 in this one, so I'm going to take FAU, and it wouldn't concern me if you enter the fourth quarter up 21 because you might just finish up 35.
All right, so Lane Train 2-7 against the spread this year, but a different situation getting this Western Kentucky team, which has been in a spiral here. Let's go with Cincinnati now. That's another team you like. Open 12, now 13.5.
Yeah, and this one is a play on Cincinnati because they actually have one of the more underrated defenses in the country. When you look at their defense, they are holding opponents to 114 yards below their season average. That's the ninth best mark in the country. They also, last year, they didn't really get good quarterback play from Hayden Moore. They're getting good quarterback play out of Desmond Ridder. 13-5 ratio, and he's also run for 437 yards. Really impressed me last week with that 42-0 shutout over Navy, a Navy team that does not get shut out. And then South Florida. Now, way back when they were 7-0, I said they're the fakest 7-0 team in the country. They're still the fakest 7-2 team in the country. You know, Georgia Tech outgained them by 176 yards. Illinois had them by two scores in the fourth quarter. East Carolina outplayed them every play of the game, a 24-9 first down edge. Tulsa had them by two scores in the fourth quarter. They get by lowly Connecticut by eight. Then they get smacked by Houston by 11 and smacked by Tulane by 26 last week. It's going to be cold weather. South Florida's defense is nowhere near what South Florida defenses have been in the past. They're giving up 5.2 yards per carry this year, and offensively they're inconsistent. So I think matched up against a strong Cincinnati defense, we have a very good Cincinnati team that's in the mix to get to the AAC title game, and I like Cincinnati to win this one by more than two touchdowns.
Quick correction, they lost to Houston by 21, not 11. But, yeah, no, I'm mad at myself for not jumping on Tulane a week ago. That's like one of my favorite things to do. As soon as a team suffers a big loss in college football, go against them the next week. Power ratings haven't adjusted to a team that's really emptied the tank. That's why I like Tennessee so much this week after facing Kentucky after that big loss to Georgia. That was a huge game for the Wildcats. So I like the Vols getting the six. And I'm really mad I didn't jump on Tulane last week. But to your points, I really like where your thinking is here in Cincinnati, because this was not just a team that was undefeated. They were a phony. And then finally it got up to them at Houston, and then Tulane was really just an embarrassment to lose like that at home. Maybe they bounced back a little bit in terms of effort, but I don't think they're that good. So I'm with you on Cincinnati there.
Yeah, when the temperature's in the 40s, you know, at game time, and you're from Florida, and getting into that second half down by a couple scores, you sort of want to get to the locker room, don't you?
Yeah, and also, like, anyone who's ever played sports like that, I mean, this is kind of an elementary concept, but it applies. Like, you know, you just think about the cold. When you're outside and you're not used to the cold, you talk with your buddies on the sidelines if you're like, man, it's cold. Like, that's all you can think of, whereas you're already seasoned and conditioned to it.
Yeah, if you're in Cincinnati, it's been a pretty cold last 3 weeks in Ohio, so they'll be used to the temperatures, no doubt about it.
All right, I think I think you got one for me in the column there, and maybe SportsCenter Saturday as well.
Oh, there you go! Wow, and you're going with Bama in the first half, right?
I know. I gotta think about this one. This is a flat spot here. This is a real flat spot. We'll see. I know. I didn't go with it last week, although I did lay the 14 last week. So I went with Bama game bet. Didn't hurt me either one. But, yeah, another 2-1, by the way, last week, Phil. Another 2-1.
Yeah, the streak's still out there, Doug. And you know what? 2-1, we go back to what we were talking about before you became Mr. 3-0.
Right.
And that's I'll take a 2-1 week any day of the year.
Yeah, the Gators got me. I'm still frustrated at that one. They converted like 7 3rd-and-9s or higher and got touchdowns on some of them. It was just a game that got away, but Drew Locke played well. We'll tip our cap to him there. So let's go back to go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, go ahead and give Drew Locke some praise, because it's very rare when he has a big game against a good defense, and he did actually have a good game there.
Yeah, his throws were on the money and 3rd-and-longs, like I said. So he did a nice job. It was more of the Gators just stunk on offense too. So it was a little bit of both, but whatever. It happens. Let's go with Texas A&M, a team you did back last week. We alluded to it earlier. Got there by the hook, and you like them here in a favorite situation.
Yeah, and I like them for numerous reasons here this week, Doug. You know, first of all, we talked about South Florida and what a fake 7-0 team they were. Texas A&M may be the best 5-4 team in the country by far. You look at what they were doing. I mean, they outgained Clemson by 88 yards. They also have a loss to Alabama, which was only by 22, the closest game that Bama's played all year. So not a bad game there either. You look at some of their other games. They outgained Arkansas by 129 yards, but only won by 7. They outgained Kentucky by 212 yards. An interesting stat from that game, Kentucky did not run a single play on offense from Texas A&M's side of the field the entire regular game in regulation. They did in overtime, but not during regulation. They only had 8 first downs against Texas A&M, yet somehow that thing went to overtime. South Carolina, they have a 159-yard edge, only win by 3 in the rain. The Mississippi State game, it was a game which they could easily have won. And then the Auburn game, just watching it, like I said, so comfortable with that thing middle of the fourth quarter. I might have inadvertently marked a W down on my sheet, Doug, and maybe that's what cost them there, because Auburn came back and burned them. Then you look at Ole Miss. How do they stack up against the best teams they've played?
They stink.
Well, remember the,
they stink. That's how they stack up.
Alabama, they got a touchdown on the first play, and then they just wanted to get out of the park without giving up 100 points in that one. LSU beat them 45-16. Auburn, which was struggling to run the football on anybody, ran the ball for 269 yards, 5.8 yards per carry, and beat them 31-16. So against the best three teams they face, and I would take Texas A&M over Auburn, Texas A&M and LSU about the same. Ole Miss has just been rolled. And Texas A&M has been home for 4 weeks. They're excited. They're a perfect 4-0 against the spread at home this year. So I think you've got a team that can run the football. Ole Miss giving up 241 yards on the ground, 5.3 yards per carry. They can throw the football. Kellen Mond against the secondary, it's given up 67% completions. I don't think Ole Miss can be able to run it. A&M's got one of the best run defenses in the country, and I think A&M will be able to get after their QB. And we've seen Ole Miss can be shut down by good defenses. A&M's got one. And the final stat I'll throw at you, A&M is plus 70 yards per game in SEC play. Ole Miss is minus 62. We have two different levels of teams, and yet the spread's reasonable. It's under two touchdowns. I'm taking Texas A&M minus the 11.5.
Stop. Hammer time.
I think you hit the nail on the head here. I think this is a Texas A&M team total over as well. I think this is a, you know, they got to get to 40 points, which I think they do easily in this game. I really do. I think this, they roll them. I really do. I think Ole Miss, remember, can't go to a bowl game this year. I just think they're going to get rolled in this game for all the reasons you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a lot of, and I just, the minute I've switched the set on A&M Auburn, I said, while that game was a close win for me, which, as you mentioned, some folks lost, I said, that's going to pay me dividends the next 3 weeks because A&M's going to be underrated.
Yeah, I really like that one. All right, you have a total, and I want to throw some games at you as well. We'll get to that after a quick word from one of our sponsors. All right, back with Phil Still here on the Behind the Bets podcast. So, Phil, we covered your first four plays, BC plus 20, but that line may go higher. FAU minus 20, Cincy minus two touchdowns, 13.5-ish, and then Texas A&M minus 11.5. But you have a total for us.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one. Now, you're familiar with the magazine, right, Doug?
Yes.
Okay, so we've got the stat sheets on the right-hand page. And on Phil Steele Plus, we actually color-code them green and red. Green for good and red for bad. Well, Illinois' rushing offense is all green all year. These guys are averaging 249 yards per game on the ground, 6.1 yards per carry. And you might not realize that, but if you've been following Illinois, they have got a run game that can run the football. Reggie Corbin doing a great job. A.J. Bush can run it. And when they play Epstein, they sort of dropped him off the radar. He's averaging 6.9 yards per carry. Well, color-coded green and red. So go to the defense, rush defense for Nebraska. I got a lot of red there. They're giving up 205 yards per game on the ground, 5.4 yards per carry. Will Illinois be able to run the football here? Yes. And if you can run it, then you have a better shot at throwing it. Like last week, A.J. Bush hit 18 of 25 for 216 yards throwing a football because they ran the ball down Minnesota's throat. Now let's go to the flip side of the coin. Nebraska's offense running the football, all green, right down the board. 5.2 yards per carry. Adrian Martinez, a dynamic runner. He's back and healthy. Azigbo's been running the ball well. They're averaging over 5 yards per carry this year. Let's look at that Illinois defense, all red. These guys are giving up 6.3 yards per carry on the ground, 283 yards per game in Big Ten play on the ground. So do you bring an extra safety? Do you bring two safeties up to stop the run? You're going to give up some big plays on both sides of the ball. I think both teams run the ball at will, which opens up the pass game and leads to a lot of big plays in this game. Total's reasonable for nowadays. It's like 67.5, 68 in this one. So I think both teams going to put the points up. It wouldn't surprise me if one of them came near the 50-point level in this one, which means the other one only has to score a few times.
All right. I like getting involved in the totals here. People love them, especially overs. There's no reason that thing shouldn't fly over the total. I alluded to it earlier. I wanted to get your take on Tennessee plus the 6 against Kentucky, given the flat spot for the Wildcats.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's one of those where, my computer's got Kentucky winning by six. Tennessee has played well. I like the way that Tennessee played against South Carolina, nearly won that game, probably should have won that game, beat Auburn a couple weeks back. And when you look at Kentucky, the main thing that I look at when I see Kentucky, they've got that dominant run game. At least it was dominant. They only ran the ball for 70 yards against A&M. They only ran the ball for 91 against Missouri. And last week against Georgia, 84. So teams have been able to slow them down running the football. Now, that's my biggest question. Will Tennessee be able to do that? Tennessee on the year has given up 204 yards per game on the ground, 5.1 yards per carry. But you got to think the intensity level off the defense won't be as high as it was in the last week. That was a big game. It's a bubble burst game, as you mentioned. And the last time, or the last two times it went on the road, they needed a late comeback against Missouri. Remember, it looked like they were done in that game, scored on the last play to win 15-14, and then didn't even run a play from Texas A&M's side of the field the entire game in regulation. So it makes sense. I'm not super high on the play, but I can see your point there, Doug.
We kind of sniffed out the Maryland situation last Saturday, kind of played out that way, although we got a huge break by a defensive score, fumble in the end zone, touchback thing. But Sparty got the W with the wind, controlled the game, the line of scrimmage, really, that the Terps were unable to run. So now they're back at home. It at East Lansing, Ohio State coming in. Buckeyes laying 3.5 in this top 20 matchup in the Big Ten. Thoughts on that?
One of these games. Now, first of all, my first thought is I watched the Ohio State game last week, Doug, and I've got 12 TVs on. I had to check the set about 10 times before I got adjusted to the fact that was an Oregon State against Nebraska. It was actually Ohio State. What the heck are you doing with those stupid black uniforms? All right, let me get that off the shelf. With Ohio State, they have not been impressive all year. I mean, not a single game. They can run. Yeah, they've got the offense. The defense has given up big plays. Last week, they finally got the run game going. You figured they would, coming off a bye against a weak run defense. Will they be able to run the ball here on Michigan State's a big-time question. Michigan State's run defense holding opponents to 72 yards per game, just 2.5 yards per carry. But will Michigan State be able to take advantage of this offense that gives up a lot of big plays? Because I don't see a lot of big play makers for Michigan State. So that could mean Ohio State's defense plays one of their better games. Maybe this is the game Ohio State comes out and looks like the Ohio State team we thought they would all year. They've won their last six trips here to East Lansing. I like the Buckeyes to win the game. I think they're the better team. They have more talent overall. I've got them winning by 7, but it won't be up there as one of my top plays just because every week I go, oh, that team played Ohio State closer than expected. Ohio State really hasn't played too many good games this season.
What do you make of who's going to play QB for Sparty? Because Lewicki's, he's been shaky, man.
Yeah, Lewicki hurt his shoulder, and he hasn't really been 100%. Right. And Rocky Lombardi looked great against Purdue two games ago. I mean, he threw for 318 yards. I think Michigan State fans are secretly hoping that Rocky Lombardi gets to start at QB. He did come in off the bench for Lewicki against Maryland. Didn't do too much. They only threw for 87 yards in the game. But, you know, when you got a game like that, like you had last week, where Maryland can't run the football and you know they can't pass it, no sense getting crazy. Don't give up an interception return for like a touchdown like they almost did. And you're going to end up winning the game. So they were playing rather conservative. But it doesn't bother me if Lewicki starts or Lombardi starts. I think the Michigan State offense is going to be basically the same. And Lewicki this year has been one of the more disappointing QBs out there. Remember last year he had over 500 yards rushing and he had a 20-7 ratio. Well, this year he's only got 117 yards rushing and there's only three games left. And he's got an 8-8 ratio. So Rocky Lombardi, I like what I saw of him against Purdue.
Kai's got a play for you, Phil. I want to get your opinion on this. Kai, because I can't say it out loud. I want you to ask Phil Steele about this one.
All right, Phil, I'm going to preface it with there is no reasonable or logical information behind this. But I think just because I think Michigan is in the top four and they're going to play themselves and psych themselves out of it, I have Rutgers. At first I said winning the game. Then I amended it to covering.
Keep in mind, Phil, he's a product of the fine institution, so of Rutgers.
Yes. So. Oh, okay. All right. It had to be something like that. Because if you go up to the window and bet the money line on that one, Kyrie, then I think you you're just donating to the bank of Las Vegas. I do think that what we're going to see, we've seen it in years past, the corrections. You know, once the BCS or the playoff rankings come out, we see the teams not cover because everyone wants to play those teams and the spreads get inflated. And after the way Michigan looked against Penn State last week, the Vegas had to put this number high enough to actually get somebody to bet on Rutgers in this one. And the total or the game is 40, which is pretty high. And, Michigan only has Indiana on deck. I don't see Rutgers necessarily scoring. The scary part to me of backing Rutgers in this game would be the high amount of interceptions they have. They have 4 touchdown passes and 17 interceptions this year. If Michigan's defense scores 14 or 21 points in this game, you could be in trouble, but it does look like a flat spot coming off Penn State. In fact, they're coming off Wisconsin, Michigan State, Penn State. They're taking on a team that, frankly, last year I had Michigan over Rutgers at home in this game, and they were like minus 21.5, and they only won 35-14. They do have a better offense this year, but I don't think you're completely out of your mind, Kyrie. I think what you're going to see is a lot of these big favorites this week not covering, especially after they all covered last week, and then in the NFL, the big favorites covered, so all those lines are inflated right now, but good luck to you, Kyrie, on that one.
38-0, that's my...
To your BC point, yeah, a lot of teams are going to be smelling themselves.
There you go.
Phil, almost as big of a game there is Auburn, Georgia, almost. This one, a ranked matchup between the hedges. You know, Auburn has a very good defense, and they're coming off the big win. Do we like Georgia laying the 2 touchdowns here?
You know, I do. When I look at Auburn, I see a team that, and we've talked about this in previous weeks. I believe I probably even talked about it last week. They're at their best when they can run the football. And you go back to when Kerryon Johnson went out last year down the stretch. They struggled to run the football in the last 3 games and didn't cover any of the last two games. Georgia, they averaged 3.7 yards per carry, and UCF just 2 yards per carry. And then this year, they've only had 1 game against an FBS opponent where they've averaged over 4 yards per carry, over 4.3 yards per carry, and that was Ole Miss, and that was a game they won easily. Now, Georgia's run defense did get run on by Florida, 4.6, LSU, 5.4, Vanderbilt, 4.8. So it's not dominating, but they're getting better. They were very young at the start of the year. I think we're going to see that Georgia rush defense be a lot better down the stretch, especially when the linebackers can start flowing in there better, and they've got experience now. So I do think Auburn still struggles to run the football, and that means they could be in trouble. And defensively, the D's actually given up some yards recently, 421 yards, 28 first downs at Texas A&M last week, and I like the way the Georgia offense is operating right now. In fact, Auburn's given up 3.9 yards per carry in SEC play. So I actually lean with Georgia at home between the hedges in this one to win it by more than 2 touchdowns.
And I want our listeners to know that I did not prep Phil with these games that I was going to ask him about after the fact. The man is just a machine. So I hope people realize it. Obviously, he prepared some notes coming in for his plays, but the games I'm asking about are high-profile games, yes, except for the one in Piscataway. But Phil is that big of a machine. So, Phil, we appreciate all that knowledge you shared.
Yeah, we could talk about any game in the future, Doug. We could talk about Georgia Southern against Troy next time or anything like that.
Go ahead.
What's that?
I was just going to say, can we recap the big Brown water polo win over MIT on Saturday? I was tweeting about, I was watching on ESPN3 in my laptop with my 5 TVs in the background.
Nice. Next time you do something like that, Doug, I'm always tweeting out a picture of my 12 TVs. I'd like to retweet yours out.
Okay.
Because that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, I did tweet it out. I'll CC you there. I'll tag you in that tweet. Because
Who are you going to use this weekend, Doug?
Well, I told you, I'm leaning Tennessee, and visualize Thornton Mellon on the top of the springboard and okay. Before the triple Lindy, and Rodney Dangerfield does the armpit noises and then licks his thumb and then puts the thumb out. That's sort of me testing the wind throughout the course of the week. So that's how I approach the picks on SportsCenter. So I think I'm leaning Tennessee, and then I'm kind of liking where you're headed here with A&M and even Cincinnati. I really like those plays as well. We're going to talk to John Murray. He's going to share some picks from behind the counter as well. And it's only Wednesday. I got to get my picks for Friday. I think I'm going to go more. I went 2-1 last week in my column as well. I think I'm going to step it up this week because I had a lot of other games I liked that would have hit. So that's where I'm leaning, and I'm always going to look at Alabama first half as well.
Yeah, don't forget about Alabama first half. That would be my advice. But all right, it was always Doug, it's always a lot of fun. I really enjoy our Wednesday conversations.
All right, great stuff, Phil. Appreciate it as always.
All right, have a good one, my friend.
You too.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. Straight ahead, we'll catch up with John Murray, who continues to dish out strong plays from behind the counter. But first, a message from one of our sponsors. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Did you know you can even get postage on demand? All you need? Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. All available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. Right now, use BETS, B-E-T-S, for this special offer. 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in BETS. That's Stamps.com. Enter BETS.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
He's back for more. John Murray back here on the Behind the Bets podcast. How are you, bud?
I'm doing good. It's always a pleasure to come on and talk college football with you, Doug. Well, NFL, less of a pleasure. Still a pleasure, but not as much of one.
How bad was last weekend?
It was pretty bad. You know, we had a pretty good result on the Sunday night game. We had a guy that he just bet into a lot of the secondary markets. Like he bet Brady over touchdowns, Rodgers over touchdowns, Packers team total over, first half over, and he lost so many of those bets, and the game went under. So we saved a lot of money, or we won a lot of money on the Sunday night game. And then the Monday night game was huge. You've got the Titans winning outright against Dallas. Plus, we did very well in the Thursday night game. So the NFL weekend as a whole actually wasn't that bad. But just looking at Sunday morning was a disaster. But the rest of the day was okay. The rest of the weekend, was okay.
Well, we'll talk more about that. David Purdom did a nice job reporting that historic loss. All depends on your, perspective of historic, but also depends on the book, too. Some books took it on the chin a lot more. I mean, that goes back to that Rams game with Todd Gurley falling down. It actually helped some books and hurt others. So you can't make a consensus sort of, consensus conclusion on just a couple data points.
You don't want to do that, but I can, without talking to any of my fellow bookmakers around Nevada, I'm guessing the Chiefs-Browns game went poorly for all of us.
Yeah. We'll get into that and the pain I have with pick'em leagues, because sometimes you just have to take ridiculous numbers. I think my pick'em league had 10.5 in that game, so I had to take the Browns, but I never would have done.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. All right, bud, let's talk college football, because you've been giving out some great plays from behind the counter. 4-1, I believe, last week.
Yeah, the five plays I mentioned last week when we taped this show went 4-1. The only loser was Colorado on Friday night. Colorado +3.5 at Arizona. And unfortunately for me, I bet Colorado, and I used Colorado in the Golden Nugget contest, which I'm in. So sometimes you don't pick the right ones, Doug. I used Cal, too. Cal, I think, was +11 at Washington State. And we mentioned that on the show last week. That was a good one. But 4-1 overall, can't complain about that.
Yeah, we'll take that. That'll more than move the sticks. By the way, how are you doing in that Golden Nugget contest?
Okay, 35-28.
Pretty good.
Mostly use college play. It's a cool format. It's 7 picks a week, college and pro. And I try to never use pro. I try to go all college because I can't pick an NFL winner to save my life, but doing good on the college. And you know, we talk about this every week, but we see the sharper groups in these college games do pretty well, and certainly I'll follow them and see what they're playing and use that to my advantage when I'm making my picks. When we talk about sharp NFL plays, and you had a very good tweet about it, Doug. It's really just groups that are taking good numbers for the limit.
That's your line. I think it's your line. I mean, I tweeted about it, but it's your information.
It's very accurate. And when I say sharp NFL plays, what I really mean to say is groups that I see winning on other sports are betting this in the NFL, and they're betting it for the limit. Is it sharp? I don't think so. I mean, you see the results. I mean, the two plays I mentioned last week were Cleveland Browns plus 8.5 and the under in the New Orleans Saints game. And it was from groups that I see winning on college football, and I'll get into some of their college plays today. But they're not winning in the NFL, and we all see that.
It's tough because they have been rewarded playing the numbers game. So people have to realize that they have computer models, and basically they have an output of a number, and if they see enough disparity, much like we've talked about on SportsCenter with Football Power Index, our ESPN, there's a difference between the ESPN FPI and the Vegas spread of at least 5 points. The ESPN FPI has done really well against the point spread. But it does not factor in, you know, flat spots, things like that, or really injuries in the NFL. They don't even factor in the NFL injury that much. So there is a art to handicapping. And my biggest beef with a lot of the sports betting Twitter folks is that they are extremely myopic. And it really bothers me that trolls can come after me because I'm not an analytics guru or number cruncher or have a computer model like they are, it doesn't mean that's the only way to win. Like, there are people, and I've had, you know, back in the day, there was a guy called the Italian Stallion, this old guy we would bring on every week, and the dude would go 2-1 or 3-0 every single week in the NFL. He just did.
Good nickname.
Guys, we'd play the Rocky music too. Sometimes some guys just pick winners, and you know, it drives them crazy. But what's so funny to me is that they come after anyone who doesn't do it their way, which is literally the definition of myopic. So, like, they only see it their way, and it's funny is the reverse is, like, I don't go after the computer model guys, and there's other people who get attacked on Twitter. So there are more than one way to skin a cat, and so I kind of get a chuckle out of the model losing on weekends because, you know, we talked about in the NFL podcast a year ago why people were just completely blindly betting the Browns. Oh, my value says 4 and it's 2 or whatever it is. It's like, all right, whatever, they're the Browns. And bad coaches find ways to lose. And as we see a shift in points and other things, the offensive stuff, like, there's just, you know, maybe their models need tweaking, or sometimes you just go on a bad run.
Well, I can tell you right now, the wise guys are going to bet the Browns again this week. The Browns catching 4 points at home against the Falcons. But I try not to dip my toes into gambling Twitter too much, Doug. I don't want to get into any back and forth. I know you'll sometimes go back and forth with those guys. And most of the people are very positive, and they're just trying to learn. But some of the stuff I see in there. We had a guy, so, you know, we put up – and I'm sure we'll talk about it on this show, but we put up Alabama-Clemson. We put up Alabama minus 8.5 on Sunday. And we had some media guys were tweeting it out, and they tagged me in a couple of the tweets. And this one guy responded and was like, oh, they're just doing that for publicity. They're probably taking $25. So the guy who had tweeted it out, the media guy, he texted us at the Westgate, and we told him, no, we're taking $5,000. So the guy fired back and said, no, I talked to those guys. They're taking $5,000 on it. And then this guy on Twitter, he wouldn't back down. He still fired back as if that wasn't a good limit on on a hypothetical game with no market. The guy wouldn't back down. Like, right there, that's where the guy needs to back down and admit he's wrong, right? I mean, if we're taking $5,000, that's pretty respectable. And sometimes you just can't win an argument with gambling Twitter, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Because if that guy wouldn't admit that $5,000 is a lot for a hypothetical game, you just can't win with these people.
It reminds me of Michigan State against Alabama in the college football playoff. The game, I think it was 24-0 final. The spread was 10. And I remember Ryan Russillo was doing radio that day. I think there was, like, outpouring of, like, why is Alabama favored by someone? That's so stupid. Like, all this stuff. And at a certain point, I think Russillo goes, you know, guys, you can go bet the 10. If you think it's so wrong, go bet plus 10. Like, if it's so crazy. And he's just like, all these people want to complain, and then you hold a mirror in front of their face, and then they find something else and redirect the complaints.
I respect people more when they admit that they're wrong on stuff. Like, when you've been proven wrong beyond a shadow of a doubt, that's when you kind of need to lay down and just go, okay, I'm wrong about that. And the funniest part of this exchange was the guy is really a sharp guy. I follow him on Twitter because I respect his opinions, and he's in there arguing that 5,000 is not a respectable limit for a look-ahead hypothetical game. It's like, come on, man. I mean, he's a sharp guy. He got this one wrong. Just got to let it go. But that's exactly why I don't go back and forth with people on Twitter. You just can't win.
And you probably would take more than 5K if in certain situations.
From certain players, we would. Right. But yeah, you're absolutely right about that. But for 5,000 is like the over the counter limit that we would give anybody, even if it was somebody we thought was a very sharp guy. And what the guy was saying, what this gentleman was saying, was that 5,000 ultimately will be a drop in the bucket for us on that game, and he's not wrong about that. He's right about that. But the bottom line is, you're talking about a hypothetical game that has no market on a number that the three of us just put our heads together and made up, and we're taking five dimes. I think that's pretty good, and I think anybody that knows this industry would tell you that that's a pretty good size bet on something like that.
Well, and what's the negative? Like, what's his issue? Like, I think put a hypothetical of the Kings playing. Or excuse me, how about the Cavs playing the Warriors again in the finals? Not going to happen, but what if you put up a hypothetical line of game one, 14.5? Like, why is that a bad
thing? What he was doing, where his criticism originated, my guess is that a lot of books, not so much in Nevada, but in the global market, they put these things up and they take very low limits on them and they do it just for publicity. And the guy is absolutely right about that. He's 100% spot on. And I think he thought that's what this was. But then when we told him, like, no, man, we're taking 5K, that's when he needs to back down. That's when he needs to go, okay, I'm wrong. But he wouldn't do that because it's gambling Twitter, and gambling Twitter is never wrong.
Yeah, that's fair. I also don't have an issue with some of the other stuff, whether it be props or funny prop bets, like, I don't know, like, will Des Bryant, what will his first touchdown celebration be? I think what we need to realize is the needle has shifted, or the market has shifted a little bit from gambling space to newsy space. So people are sort of warming up to the concept of gambling. Like, I have some pretty elementary tweets sometimes, just basically explaining things, because I think people are digesting stuff, and that's why we have Confessions of a Non-Gambler for Kai at the end of the podcast. So I think why maybe a marketing ploy to a certain extent, I also don't think it's egregious if, like, ESPN acknowledges something, because I think there's some part of the learning curve that's going on right now.
I agree, and I do think that there are some people out there that are really smart guys that really understand sports betting, and it's unfair for them to complain when we're pointing out elementary stuff to listeners or viewers. Not everybody is on their level, and they should just sort of – they should realize that, and they shouldn't have a problem when – we go kind of down to the ABCs of sports betting, because we're not only appealing to these, like, top end wise guys. We're trying to talk to everybody.
Again, myopic. and our downloads have increased, and I don't think they're increasing with sharp listeners. I don't think they're like the wise guys are all of a sudden starting to listen to this podcast. I think it's more the novice people dipping their toe in. Somebody tweeted you and I last week asking a question, and I forgot what it was, but it was very basic, and I, you know, retweeted it with the answer, because I think that, you know, the gentleman was so nice on Twitter saying, hey, sorry for the, you know, inconvenience, which it's not, but he was just so deferential, and I appreciated that that tone, which is so rare on Twitter. And just, look, we're all learning. This is something you and I have been doing for a long time, or at least covering or immersed in it, but not everyone has, and they're curious, if nothing else.
Well, you probably have people out there, I'm sure you have people out there, they have regular jobs, they have families, they don't have time to analyze the sports betting market 24 hours a day, so they might not understand it as much as some of these tough guys on gambling Twitter, Doug. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I still can't pick a winner in the NFL, so I'll never tease anybody for asking any question. No way.
Well, you've been picking out winners, or at least sharing the winners for college. So last week, your one loss was Colorado. That was a tough one. I liked the Buffs there after what I would thought was a flat spot for Arizona. It was a one-point game in the fourth, got away from us, and
quarterback for Colorado, Montez, just had his opportunities through a pit. It just, it was frustrating, but that's gambling.
That's college football betting. I mean, you can almost I don't know that you can ever really complain after a college football loss. It's just we see these things all the time, and Ed and I just shake our head, and Ed Sammons and I, and Ed Sammons loves to just say, it's college. Just have to let it go. It's college football betting, very, very, very difficult, but it's a much more beatable market than the NFL is, and we see our sharper guys have way more success in college than in pro, and that's why the picks that we've been talking about on the show have done very well this year.
Well, the one that did get there was Cal, plus double digits, against Washington. Now, it got a little, Washington State, it got a little hairy there. You had that fumble in the end zone,
yes,
the defensive touchdown that ends up being a touchback for the offense.
Yeah, it was a sad moment for me. I got together with a bunch of my friends to watch the UFC game or the UFC fights on Saturday night. Everybody scattering after the main event was over, and I stayed at the bar to watch the end of the Cal-Washington State game because I had a little investment in it. But, you know, that number got all the way down to 7.5 here. So certainly the groups that were taking 10.5 and 11 early in the week were certainly on the right side of the number. And I watched pretty much that whole game. That was the right side. Although you're right. Without that fumble in the end zone, could have been a different result, but that's college football. You can always point to a few plays that changed the game.
Oh, totally. And who knows? It still could have been a different kind of win with the spread, like a backdoor cover, if that happens that way. It wasn't like, you know, the only way to win that game. So how'd you guys do a Bama-LSU? Because we sniffed that out on the podcast all week.
You can probably guess how we did on the first half. How do you think we did on the first half?
I can't believe I got off the money train there.
We didn't do well in the first half. People were laying Alabama first half, as they have done successfully, 9 times now? So we lost on the first half, but we did okay in the game because there was a lot of money on LSU. Our largest bet on that game was a gentleman that took LSU plus 14.5. Now, he did get a good number because I saw that line close globally around 13, 13.5 in a lot of respected books. So clearly there was money that came in late on LSU, but they were just overwhelmed by Alabama. And, you know, you and I have talked several times this year about how great Alabama is offensively. And based on what I saw Saturday, we've been underestimating their defense. Their defense has just never been pushed. They've never been challenged. They've never had to play a full game. And I think we saw just how good their defense can be on Saturday night, shutting out LSU.
Yeah. It's funny, I wrote that piece for Bama, and Ed at the time, you know, a month ago or so, said it was the most impressive thing he saw all season was Alabama's D shutting down Ole Miss after that opening play touchdown. And you could tell from Saban after the game how fired up he was. He's like, oh, they wanted to talk about our schedule. I'm just glad we set the tone here. You know, he rallied the troops, and he knows how to push the buttons properly. Obviously, he's such a successful coach. But I did not understand the LSU. Like, you know me. I kind of approach it like, what will I feel less dumb about? Like, for me, it was Bama or pass. Like, I didn't think it made any sense to bet into Bama here. Like, I know the Death Valley. I know the night. But it's just Bama. They've been so dominant for so long.
I didn't see any of our sharper groups weighing in on the side in that game. But we did have probably our best college football totals group. They bet the game under 53, and then they bet the game again under 52. And they were certainly right on the money there.
Certainly, yeah.
Although they also bet the under in the Oklahoma-Texas Tech game. So we got to take the good with the bad now. No one's perfect, but they were certainly spot on with that Alabama-LSU under. LSU just could never get anything going offensively. And they tried to kick a field goal down 22-0, Doug. That was sad.
Was that 11 minutes to go?
I believe so, yeah. Wow. It's just very... I guess the logic is they don't want to get shut out, but I don't think that sends the right message.
Well, I'm not saying they should have, but there are cases, not this one, but other cases where sometimes it affects recruiting and things like that, where you have to sort of sense another layer to the game. Obviously not in the NFL, but the shutout thing does make sense sometimes. Not here. So I think it was 4th and goal from the 7 or something like that. It was makeable.
I don't remember exactly where the ball was, but I just remember thinking, wow, they forgot that kicking is for losers. And and then the guy missed. I mean, it's just kicking field goals is not the way to go.
Well, I owe Ed Sammons a beer because he and I were texting about the Louisville game with Clemson, and I thought, you know, taking 40-ish points was a pretty good bet in a Power 5 game. No, I owe him a beer. He is, asked him to predict the score. I think he said 75-3. He wasn't far off.
Clemson, it reminds me a little bit of the 2017 Cleveland Cavaliers. This is a team that would win the championship in almost any season, and they just have the misfortune of peaking and doing it during the year when there's just an historically all-time great team. And I think this Alabama team is the best team I've seen since I've been in the industry in college football. But I think Clemson is also historically great. They just have the misfortune of doing it in the same year as this Alabama team. And, like, I know you and I talked about this. That 2017 Cavaliers team, they were a great team. They just peaked in the same year that Golden State added Kevin Durant, and they had no chance.
That's a great, great comparison. We definitely talked about it at the time. I like how you drew from that for the Clemson, because now that they've done the quarterback switch, they're loaded. And we might dismiss them in years because we get so consumed with championships. I blame Derek Jeter. I blame Kobe Bryant. And it is what it is, but
That 17 Cleveland team, the Cleveland front office got a lot of grief for the team they built there around LeBron. But that 17 team, they would have won the championship in just about any year of the last 20 years in the NBA. And that's how I feel about this Clemson team with Lawrence at quarterback. This team would be the national champions in college football in a lot of recent seasons. Can they beat Alabama? That remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think that Cavs team would have beaten the first Warriors championship team.
Oh, I do too. I think it would have beaten just about every team in that post Shaq Kobe Lakers era. I think just about every team from about 2004 until present day. I think that 17 Cleveland team was better than. So it was just misfortune. They peaked in the year where the 73-win Warriors added Kevin Durant in his prime, so they lost. And I think it reminds me a lot of what we're seeing this year in college football with just two historically great teams, and hopefully we get to see them play each other in Santa Clara for the championship, because I think it'd be a great college football game.
Well, let's talk about that Alabama-Clemson line. 8.5, what kind of handle have you seen in terms of sharp on that hypothetical matchup? And for those new to the program, like we alluded to earlier, if Clemson does not play Alabama in the championship game, everyone gets their money back.
Yeah, and it's important to understand that. Even if they somehow play each other in the college football playoff in one of the semifinal games, it's still a refund. This bet is only action if they play each other in the championship game in Santa Clara. Right, we still have it at 8.5, Alabama minus 8.5. We did take one guy, a guy that we respect, bet $1,000 on Clemson plus 8.5. That's the only significant bet we've seen so far. A couple small tickets on Alabama. We haven't moved the number yet. I think that line's about right. I actually made it 7.5 myself, but some of the other guys were pushing for a higher number, and I can see why. Alabama just looks so good right now, and this was the morning after they just demolished LSU in that high-profile game. So you can see why the number would be a little bit higher than maybe it would have been if we'd put it up the previous weekend.
Where do you think this line moves?
It's a cop-out answer, but it's going to depend entirely on what happens in the semifinal games. Like we saw, what was that, 2 years ago when Clemson just destroyed Ohio State. I think they shut out Ohio State in the semifinal game. And then everybody bet Clemson the following week against Alabama in the championship game. If Clemson, let's say Clemson beats Notre Dame 40-0 and Alabama wins by two touchdowns or some other smaller margin against Michigan or Oklahoma, then I definitely think the public will come in on Clemson and the number will go down. It all depends on how these teams look in those semifinal games, the last look the public gets at them before they play each other.
So you don't think it moves much between now and maybe like the conference championship games?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't see where else you could go with it. I don't see how it could be anything other than somewhere between Alabama minus 7.5 and Alabama minus 9. I think 10 would be way too high because I think Clemson is that good. And I don't think you can go down to 7 either because I think at 7 you'd see nothing but Alabama money. So where we are right now in the calendar, I'm okay with this number being 8.5, and I don't see any reason to move off of that number unless we saw some significant betting on it.
We'll get into picks momentarily. I want to mention something I did tweet about. I was in a group text with you. Am I crazy to say Tua is not the best quarterback in the country right now today? Like, if you had to win one game, is Tua the best quarterback in the country?
I think he is. I would choose him over anybody. I think that it makes any quarterback look better when they're playing around a great team with great coaching. That would make any player in any sport look better than he is. But I still, there's nobody I'd rather have than Tua. I think West Virginia, my guy Will Greer, could be the second best, actually.
Yeah, I think him, Herbert, and Murray. Like, those are the only three. I just think he's a little green. They talked about it on the broadcast. He's just a little green. That's like, we're splitting hairs. We're trying to pick a few blemishes in a beauty pageant. That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to be hot takes. Like, he will be amazing. He will be the number one pick in my eyes, or at least up there. I think so. Like, he's, like, you hit the nail on the head. He's looked great because of a lot of the talent around him, but that's not the only reason he's looked great. Obviously, he should win the Heisman. His stats are insane. His team's number one. Like, all that good stuff, and I have no problem. I was just splitting hairs here and saying those guys. Like, I think if you traded him and, like, Kyler Murray, I don't think that impacts the spread at all, does it?
Well, I think I look at Will Greer because he's a fifth-year senior with a lot of experience. I mean, if he went in there and he was Alabama's quarterback, Alabama would still be the number one undefeated team in the country. But no, I would argue that Tua has more worth to the point spread. That you can't run the team better than he's running the team right now. I don't know that they can be any better than this. I don't want to take anything away from Tua. I think he's playing awesome, but I know what you're saying. It's not like he's so much better than these other quarterbacks that, like, if one of them went in for him, that Alabama would not be the best team in the country. Any of those four guys you just mentioned could be the Alabama quarterback, and they'd still be the number one team in the nation.
And I think the bigger story is that it's such a stark contrast to what we've typically seen from Alabama's offense. That's the story, is that they have this great QB and that they have this high-powered offense, and it's so different than we've seen in the past because now it goes along with all these other weapons that they've had typically at all these other positions.
Yeah, and you can see what Dabo Swinney was doing, benching Bryant for Lawrence. He saw, like, Alabama's got a high-powered offense. If we're going to have any chance of beating them, we need to be able to throw the football, too, the way they can now. And that's why he made that early season switch, and it's paying dividends right now. And I think it's going to give them a chance in January. If they had Kelly Bryant still in there at quarterback, I don't think they would have any chance of beating Alabama.
I agree. We saw it last year in the playoff. He has limitations as a passer, and that's what Saban sniffed out with the month to prepare. And obviously we saw the result. All right, man. Pick me out a winner,
long
Bobby.
Title.
What's that?
That's a long title. Kai, do we have enough time in the show to give my title? We might need to make some cuts there, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just asking you to pick me out some winners, Bobby.
you know what? I do have some good stuff, actually, on the weekday games. I know the listeners, they love weekday games, man. Who doesn't like betting on a Wednesday night MAC game, Doug? I mean, come on. Does it get any better than that in college football?
Tuesday's better because there's not as much NBA, typically.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
Well, although we had a million college games. We'll get into Duke in a moment, but fire away, buddy.
Well, we saw Sharp Group lay Northern Illinois -3. That's games tonight. And then we saw another Sharp Group take Toledo +3.5. Yeah. So there's really some sharp money on both ends of that game. That's the Wednesday night maction. But
well,
I'll give you one on Friday night in the Mountain West where we didn't see two-way action. We had one of our sharpest college groups took Boise State +3. They are at home against Fresno State. That's the late game Friday. That should really be a pretty high-handle game. It's at 7:15 Pacific time, and there's a lot of foot traffic in the books that late on a Friday night. Everybody getting in their Saturday bets before they go out on the town. So there should be a lot of foot traffic in the books around the state, and I think there'll be a lot of handle on that Fresno-Boise game. Our sharp group took Boise plus the field goal.
So I've said this for many years. I think it's unfair that Boise has the Smurf turf. If I'm a quarterback and I'm, I got guys moving around and they got blue jerseys blending in with the turf and there's DNs dropping back into covers, taking the underneath throws on slants. I don't think it's fair. Yeah. I really don't think it should be allowed. I think they should have to wear white jerseys, and you know Fresno wears red or something. There has to be contrast to the field color.
So you have a problem if a NFL or college team has green jerseys then?
Yes, I do. I think that's weird. I don't think North Texas should be allowed to wear green.
Don't the Green Bay Packers wear green jerseys most of the time?
Yeah, I don't think it's right. I think the Smurf turf really messes with things.
So then you're endorsing the Boise +3 at home pick, it sounds like.
Well, the thing is, I've liked Fresno all year. This total seems
Fresno's
low.
Been great this year.
54. They've covered every game but one, first of all. Like let's call it what it is.
Just a terrific. They've had a terrific season in the Mountain West, and it's weird, isn't it? Strange to see Boise State at home in a Mountain West game catching points. Like that is very. That's very unusual, and it really speaks to the job that Jeff Tedford has done at Fresno State. He's done a sensational job with that football program.
I'm surprised the Sharps are weighing in, but what do I know? I like Fresno. I like the over in that game. That offense is just fire. It's high-powered.
Well, I can give you some Saturday plays you might like better. I got one for you on Saturday. I got a feeling you're not going to go for, though. I just want to let you know that.
Feed the beast.
I got a feeling. I'll give you a couple other ones first. Now, this one's moved a lot. We had a guy that I really respect laid Missouri -14, and now that number's up to 17. They're at home against Vanderbilt. Missouri's coming off of a huge win on Saturday at Florida. And Missouri was a side that we saw some sharp money on last week. Guys were taking six on Missouri.
I really liked Florida last week, too.
That was a really impressive performance by Missouri in that game.
I'm not going to say it was lucky, but there was a lot of third and tens converted. I'm just going to throw that out there by Mizzou.
You know, I didn't really watch much of that game, to tell you the truth, but I'll take your word for it. How about, here's a team that we see sharp money on a lot, and we've seen it a lot this season, Charlotte. Charlotte +14.5 at Marshall. Now, we saw some sharper groups take Charlotte last week. They covered easily, really, on the road against the Tennessee Volunteers. And we got guys coming in again this week taking them as a 2-touchdown dog. Well, this group took 14.5, I should say that. And now the number's down to 14.
So they've covered 4 straight, have the 49ers.
Yep.
6-3 on the year against the number. And only lost by 11. We're catching 22 and a hook last week. All right. All right. Those are some ugly dogs.
Like
that's an ugly dog right there.
I don't know. Charlotte's been good as a dog. I don't
it's a
think
sexy
it's that
dog.
Ugly.
Okay.
It's not as ugly
sexy.
As a... Not as ugly as Rutgers +40. That's an ugly dog.
Is that something you're seeing?
No. I haven't. I'm not giving that one out.
Hey, Kai has some thoughts on Rutgers.
Oh yeah, that
Kai.
I'm glad you brought that up, Murray, because I have no facts or evidence to support this at all. But I think merely because I think Michigan is at number 4 and they're gonna be a little high on the hog and think too much of themselves and they're gonna sleep on my Scarlet Knights. Think we're going to march in there and get that big upset.
You'll win the game?
We will win this
game.
Cover
the spread.
No.
Oh, Kai.
Hey.
It's a hot take.
You see what I'm dealing with, Murray? You see what I have to deal with out here?
That's a hot take, man. Hey, that's a hot take.
Next Wednesday, we will revisit this.
Oh, we will.
Next Wednesday, Kai, if Michigan wins by 70, you got to have a recording of you picking Rutgers to win to replay for next Wednesday's show.
I got it.
So, I'm not laying 40 points here, guys. I'm not saying that. But, you know, I got Michigan as the third highest power rated team in the country right now. Now, could they be looking down the line at the big Ohio State game in a few weeks? Maybe. But it's hard for me to believe Rutgers could be. Michigan's defense is so good.
So, Kai, I believe you have to score in order to win a game. my calculations, my computer model suggests you have to score to win a game.
Don't kill me out there, people, but this is only based on a hunch. I think it's more about Michigan than it is about Rutgers.
Why don't you stick with the +40? Let's go. Let's dip our toe in there.
Yeah, let's go with the 40. Give him the 40.
Take
Doug.
The 40.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
What would be all a money line 40. On that game?
We won't even do it. I mean, it would just – there's no – We don't even do money lines when it goes above like 3 touchdowns, 24.
That would be the second biggest upset according to the point spread ever, right? Because a year ago was Howard UNLV at 45-ish.
Yeah, I think when Jim Harbaugh's first year at Stanford, they beat USC. Pete Carroll was at USC, mm-hmm. and The point spread was right around that neighborhood, man. It was like 41-ish, like that.
I think it was in the high 30s, but yeah.
High 30s? Okay. Yeah, I mean, this would be an all-time upset. Be a hell of a call by Kai if Rutgers wins that game, but I don't think that's going to happen. Michigan, too good defensively, I think, to lose that game.
Well, I tell you, if they do win the game, Kai, we have to change that segment name. It will be no longer Confessions of a Non-Gambler. It would be Confessions of a Sharp.
Sure.
It would be Confessions of a Sharp. Any other plays, Murray?
Yeah, let me give you two more ugly dogs. We saw a group took Western Kentucky plus 20.
Yes.
They're on the road against Florida Atlantic. And then, now this number's come back up to 20 because we had some other people laying 18, laying 19. But the group that I respect the most took the 20 points in this one. And we also had a guy take Georgia State plus 14. They're on the road against Louisiana Lafayette. And that's a group that's consistently done well in college football. Took Georgia State plus 14. But I got one more for you, DK. And it's an ugly dog. It's a brutal dog. You might need to look away. It's Mississippi State plus 26 on the road in Tuscaloosa against the Crimson Tide of Alabama.
Not first half,
and you stomach that one.
Not first
half.
No.
We're all the way down to 23.5 on that game. And this group took 26. It's a group that's consistently been good in college football. And it reminds me of some of the spots where we've played against Alabama earlier in the year, where they got out to these huge leads, and then they took their foot off the gas in the third and fourth quarters and let the other team backdoor cover, I should say. So maybe we'll see that again. But the Bulldogs plus 26 was the play here.
Yeah, I actually think that's a strong play. Like, I'm okay with that play. Because
it makes sense.
Feels like A&M. It feels like those other games.
Right. And Alabama is coming off of the game that they'd been pointing to for weeks, that LSU game. So, and they basically wrapped up the SEC West with that win. Really, Alabama, these next three games are kind of meaningless unless they somehow lost two of them. Because even if they did drop one, they'd still go to the SEC championship game. And if they won that game, they'd be in the playoff anyway.
Right, right.
So it's really not much to motivate them the next 3 weeks. But it's always hard to bet against Alabama because you're usually down 7-0 about 45 seconds into the game.
You really are. It was nice to see LSU hold them off a little bit.
you know when you have a big underdog and you start watching the clock, like hoping for the clock to tick down? And in an Alabama game, it's like, oh, it's 14-0. Oh, my God, there's 11.5 minutes left in the first quarter. This is going to be ugly. But I'm just giving you what the sharp groups are on, man.
All right, so we got conflicting opinions tonight, NIU and Toledo. Any group better than the other?
I probably would lean more to the Northern Illinois group, and that's why we still have the game minus 3.5. This the group that laid the 3 is probably our best college group. But they did have the under in the Oklahoma game, so nobody's perfect.
No, that's for sure. All right, bud. Really good stuff, and no plays yet on Rutgers money line, huh? From the Sharks,
not yet, but I'll be sure to send Kai a DM when we get the first bet on the Rutgers money line. Kai sent his guy out to Nevada.
We'll have a new duffel bag, boy. Murray, real quick, Duke last night in basketball against Kentucky. How do you approach the situation moving forward, these guys?
Well, they just throttled Kentucky, and I was on the air with Matt Eumanns yesterday. Matt Eumanns is a very sharp college basketball guy, and he made a good case for Kentucky. And the only thing I had to say to him was, man, I think it might be a little bit too easy because, Kentucky actually has more of a veteran team, and Duke all freshmen. So everything Matt was saying made perfect sense.
Yeah.
And then Duke just went out there, and Matt's very sharp in college basketball, but, Duke just went out there and rolled them. It's an incredibly impressive win. We dropped them to 7-2 to win the title and minus 110 to make it to the Final Four. I do think we need to pump the brakes a little bit, though. I saw people comparing them to Alabama football or to the Warriors. It's only one game, but it's about as impressive as a one-game situation could ever be. But they're still a team of freshmen.
Well, you moved them from plus 400, so 4-1 to plus 350. And you moved them down. You said the Final Four odds. Are they the highest power rated team now?
I think they have to be. after that. I mean, it was between them, maybe Kansas, Kentucky. After that game, you have to put Duke as the best team in the country. But there's a long season, tough sledding in the ACC, and a lot of it depends on your draw in March. So I do think we need to pump the brakes a little bit, but you couldn't help but be blown away by that performance. And I was texting with Matt last night after the game, and we were both just in awe of Duke and their freshman talent. It's incredibly impressive. And it's kind of a role reversal, right, where Duke is all freshmen, all these lottery picks, and Kentucky had the veteran players. So it made perfect sense that Kentucky would win the first game. And that's why it was so impressive what Duke did last night.
I think I'm in the other camp. I think they roll. So Virginia's the second best team. You're telling me Virginia's methodical offense and good defense is going to stop these guys and transition everything? Zion Williamson looks like Larry Johnson. Zion Williamson looks like Larry Johnson.
Yeah. And he looked pretty good last night. No, I know. I mean,
they're loaded.
You have to be impressed.
And sometimes you have to get ahead of the curve. We were pretty much ahead of the curve on this Bama first half thing. When we saw Tua, it was like, all right, this is different. And these guys are like just – this reminds me of the Fab Five and the Running Rebels days. Those two teams, the Running Rebs, the Fab Five, they have that sort of edge and moxie, if you will, and they're just jumping off the screen. Unless Kentucky stinks, but if Kentucky's an elite team like they usually are, then good – hey, by the way, good luck making over-unders on these teams, especially like first half totals.
I think Kentucky is very good. They never got up off the mat. Duke hit him with the first shot, and they just were shocked, and they never recovered. But I'm not going to write off Kentucky. Kentucky is still a pretty young team too, and they're going to find themselves as we go through the season. It's just college basketball is such a long year, and obviously the biggest difference between that and the NBA is the one-off format in the tournament. Like, the Warriors are not going to lose in the NBA playoffs because nobody's going to beat the Warriors four times in seven games. So the Warriors are going to win the NBA championship. But in a one-game scenario, I can see any team losing in college basketball. We saw that in 2015 when Kentucky had Karl-Anthony Towns and Devin Booker, and they lost to Wisconsin in the Final Four. Anything can happen in a one-game situation.
So I tweeted that there was better bet is Duke, largely because you're getting 4-1 instead of like -$2. But also, I think the gap between the Warriors and other teams in the NBA is narrower than Duke. Now, look, I don't know this stuff, Cole, like it may be the NBA. I do the NBA. But I think the gap's that wide with Duke and others.
I'm going to disagree with you. I think the gap between Golden State and the second team in the NBA is extremely wide. I don't think that there's anybody even close to the Warriors, and there's no way they're going to lose a seven-game series. I don't see how it's possible, but that's just me. Houston has clearly taken a step back, and we might have been a little carried away with the Celtics. I don't think anybody has anything for Golden State in the playoffs.
Interesting. Maybe I'm...
We shall see.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can't... I'm not going to, like, you know, put all my eggs in one basket. I wouldn't be shocked if... The Warriors start to gel like they are now already. They're obviously
good. Start to gel, yeah. I think
one loss.
They're coming along. That team is pretty competitive.
Yeah, they're doing okay. All right, bud. Well, good chat. Good. We dived into a lot of topics.
I love it.
All right, man. We'll check back with you tomorrow.
I'll try to go through the. I'll do my best on the NFL show for you and for Kai.
I'll do my best. Come on.
I got you.
All right, bud.
I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
All right, sounds good. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Thank you for subscribing, downloading, rating, and reviewing. Kai?
You got it.
Seamless it now. Almost as smooth as your Rutgers money line pick.
You know, I learned something about you, Doug. I learned something about you today that was very interesting.
What?
And I want anybody that's listening to
not afraid
please...
to beat a dead horse?
No, not that. I want anybody under the sound of our voice right now to please send Doug a Boise State Broncos jersey. I didn't realize you had such hate for the Smurf turf.
I love the Smurf turf. I just think Boise State should wear white on the Smurf turf.
Got it.
Like,
is a good point. But I still think they should send you the jersey.
Yeah, I'm okay. Back in the Kellen Moore days and even before that, the Zabransky, all that stuff, I won some money on Boise State over the years. over the years. Now, I've laid some serious wood and not covered, like, you know, everyone, can't not perfect, but I've been a fan of playing on the Broncos. So you really like your Scarlet Knights, huh?
I do, man. I just have a hunch, man. It's one of those things that you feel in the pit of your stomach.
All right. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just a homer, but we'll see.
Maybe both. Right?
So you're telling me there's a chance?
All right, that's what Kai's thinking for Rutgers. All right, so good plays there. Phil Steele with five plays. Let's see if I get them right this time. BC, Florida Atlantic, Cincinnati, Texas A&M, and then the over in the Nebraska-Illinois game. So thanks to both of our guests, Phil and John Murray. And thanks to Kai. By the way, any confessions of a non-gambler or soon to be sharp?
Soon to be sharp, right. I'm going to reserve the confessions of a non-gambler for tomorrow, the NFL episode. But stay tuned.
All right, good stuff. Thanks to everyone again, and we'll catch you back here for the aforementioned NFL podcast that we will post Thursday late morning, early afternoon on the East Coast.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.